Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Football without the fans is nothing. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Monday, the 19th of April. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushin Hantharaja.
I don't know about you guys, but I haven't had much sleep last night.
Yeah.
Is that weird?
No, I felt exactly the same.
I just sat online for quite a long time reading all sorts of people's thoughts and discussions about the European Super League, whatever the hell we're supposed to call it or not call it. And I just felt sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. It was quite fitting that something like that should creep up in the dead of night, though.
Mm.
Well, I think that's a pretty crucial point, actually, Vish. Let's just fucking get into it, shall we? Because
on a Sunday as well, of all days.
So, day of
just
rest, people.
I still get that school anxiety whenever I hear fucking songs of praise.
But you work on the weekend,
and teach
mate.
Woe,
you work in football.
I know, and it still happens.
Yeah, it's
got even worse
ingrained.
Now.
It's like nearly the start of term. Or
imagine
something.
Refreshing someone's page who works for, I don't know, my paper, for example, and then not wanting to see. Sunday Instagram, great for that. Look, watching people have fun, people in beer gardens, love all that.
Yeah.
Bit of sunshine.
Pretty photos of wine glasses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe looking what an ex is up to. Who knows? We all use it differently. And then to have to pour through all that. But a necessary doom scroll. Imagine that.
Especially when you know as well that like you want more and more news so you can understand it more, but you know it's all going to be bad.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah,
and
exactly.
You're thinking, is there going to be a way that this could not happen? And then something will come out. It's like, oh no, they're talking about, you know, preemptive legal action to stop any attempts to stop it. No, they've thought of that.
So guys, it all started to trickle out. You could start getting your hit of this by sort of mid-afternoon yesterday, Sunday afternoon. The Times, Martin Ziegler and Tarek Panja in the New York Times out there first on this one. And it was that 12 of Europe's leading, quote unquote, we'll come on to that.
We will.
Football clubs have come together. The idea was that they were going to form this breakaway league. Of course, it's been discussed a number of times in the past, and there's been talk that these conversations were ongoing, but it started to come out that this was indeed going to happen. And then a statement was expected at 9:30 p.m. Like you, I was sitting around wondering when it was going to turn up. I was actually doing a bit of a radio thing at about 11:15 when when it did come out, the statement, and the statement said 12 of Europe's leading football clubs have today come together. It's the finality of the statement that hurts quite a lot, isn't it? To announce that they have agreed to establish a new midweek competition, the Super League, governed by its founding clubs, capitalized like the founding members of, I guess, the United States of America. And yeah. On that point, and on the point about the timing, it feels as though, yes, it was partly as a result of the fact that, you know, you bury bad news perhaps late at night, but also 11:15 in Europe, in Britain, is a quite unreasonable time to be releasing a statement. 6:15 in Boston, where the Fenway Sports Group is headquartered, not such an unusual time to be releasing a statement. And it just really felt as though, you know, we of course have a lot of American listeners, and I don't think they're here because this is a bit like the NBA, the Premier League. It felt like this is something that has been inflicted on the game that we love from above and from people who are dissociated from the game at its core.
Yeah, completely. I mean, the fact is that some of those clubs, including our clubs, Kate, in particular, let's be completely honest, they're there on brand recognition rather than sporting merit. And like the idea of sporting merit has just been, you know, exercised from the idea of this competition. It is all about the strength of those brands, and it is a ultimately, it has the same format as an exhibition league, because it, if there's no promotion, no relegation, like where's the jeopardy? You know, what is it that makes it's elite because you say it's elite? You know, it's such an affront to the Champions League, really, and the history of the European Cup and all the brilliant moments that has thrown up and that has made football what it is and has made you feel it. You know, you feel it when you watch it. It's particularly if you support a club who are involved in the you know, the higher ends of competitions or you're in the top leagues. You know, you have a really interesting relationship with that club because their success feels like your success in some way as well. And if that becomes this, you know, 20 versions of the Harlem Globetrotters playing each other in the middle of the week at the expense of the Champions League, in which you have to actually qualify on merit through sporting merit rather than marketing merit, then it's just everyone loses, everything suffers.
Mm. Some people will be sitting there thinking, okay, you know, this is something that has succeeded in the States. Some of the leagues look a lot more like that, where there isn't promotion and relegation. What's the big fuss about? I think for me, what feels unpleasant is that, you know, we've had 13 months of no fans, and this has been ferreting away in the background completely to prove that homegrown fans are not relevant to the sport.
I mean, they haven't been relevant for a while, though, have they? I mean, and I think I was wondering yesterday if the pandemic and the fact that we're coming up to a year without fans, barring, you know, a couple of bits in the middle, and then obviously the FA Cup game just gone on Sunday. And I wondered if they pulled the cord on an idea that has been bubbling away for a while. I think we mentioned this with Project Restart, that it's a kind of thing that's never really going to go away. And I think that's the one thing that, you know, the concept has always been used as a threat. The European Super League, you know, since Florentino Perez brought it up in, I think, 2009, it's never been floated as a remedy to any of football's ills. It's always been as something that they'll get up, the big teams will get up and leave. And it was, you know, it's brought up, you know, bear in mind there is a Champions League legislation that's going to be ratified today. It's come out on the eve of that.
Yeah. Well, we don't know now, do we? That's been thrown into doubt. Because
And it may have the desired effect where some of it is going to be written, perhaps something behind the scenes where you might get a cut if you've got, you know, I suppose, history in the Champions League in the last 10 years, which I suppose would include Spurs and Arsenal in that. And of course, you know, Manchester United and Chelsea as well, and Liverpool. I always think about this when I was a kid, and like my parents would say, like, threaten me to like get me to do stuff or whatever. And the fundamental thing about a threat is that you're fearful of it because you know it'll work, and you know that the person who is engaging in that threat is willing to carry out and has the capacity to carry it out. And the thing that really worried me yesterday is that we've never been this far along before. The fact that clubs are willing to put their names to it as well. The gutlessness of Manchester City and Manchester United not even tweeting it out from their own accounts is a completely different thing altogether. But still, you know, they've signed it. Joel Glazer, who is not even given a club media interview, is happily putting his name to this kind of stuff. It is, yeah, shameful. And, you know, as a Manchester United fan, they probably, I mean, they don't really care about match going fans anyway. They don't really care about non-match going fans in the UK. It's not really about them. It's not about us. And it never has been. And now that they've shown their hand, even if this remains as an idea, bear in mind there are a couple of things within that, such as the fact that they said it's going to start next season, but they have
August 2021.
Yeah, but they've also said, you know, as soon as possible as well, so they can hide behind that language if they need to.
Mm.
But the fact that they've put their names to it and that they're happy with being seen to have pushed this idea in the first place is quite dire. I like the fact that they don't even care is astonishing, really.
The money is there as well, isn't it, already? We've seen this 6 billion.
Yeah, no worries about the money, lads. Like, JP Morgan's coming
exactly,
in.
Yeah,
so. JP Morgan, who were going to get into bed with the Glazers for the initial takeover of Manchester United.
And Edward used to work for them.
Yes, Edward used to work for them. And then also they came on to help them with something to do with the Singapore Stock Exchange as well. So, they've...
Money's an ephemeral concept, Jim.
Well, I mean, but money talks, doesn't it? And it's saying, we are going to do this whether you like it or not. If you don't like it, we don't mind. I think the it's important to remember as well that the people making these decisions, they are looking at balance sheets. And to them, a fan is really a customer. Also, the money that clubs take in stadiums is not insignificant, but it's, you know, it's no longer the main bulk of how clubs make their revenues, is it? So as long as you're watching the games and you've got your eyeballs on it, you're propping up what makes them that money, and therefore you count as a customer. And are the three of us going to stop watching our clubs? Of course we're not. Like, so it's, we are, you can't really help but be complicit in it. I mean, I have no interest in this as a competition, really. Mm. But there will come a time where our teams are all in there, and that's just a fact. You're not going to, you know, no one loves the Carabao Cup, right? No one's particularly passionate about it.
Let's wait till the weekend.
Let's say at the start of a season, no one's like, oh, I can't wait to see the League Cup this season. But, you know, you don't go, oh, you know what, I'm not bothered about that. I'm just not going to watch it. It's your club, you know. You invested in their journey, and they've got us there. They've got us, and they can do what they want, and they are doing what they want.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? For a lot of people, the Premier League, when it came about in 1992, was a line in the sand for fans. Mm. Not many, but some. This feels like it will be a bigger line in the sand, but then again, it will be a line in the sand for match-going fans, and it doesn't really matter. How there are so many waiting lists on season tickets. There's a reason that clubs decide to have accounts in different languages because they want to infiltrate certain other markets as well. Look at Manchester United and all their, you know, ridiculous partnerships they strike up. Yeah, I mean, the one thing I can't really get my head around is the fact that they've made no kind of effort to sugarcoat any of it.
No.
Even down to like the basic box ticking exercises of that statement yesterday where they cited the pandemic, they tried to claim that it was for the betterment of the wider game when those clubs as individuals have never really given a shit about the wider game.
They made some cursory reference to a women's competition
in the future. Exactly, yeah. Where, you know, no mention of like Lyon, who've won the Champions League for the last 6 years, Wolfsburg, Liverpool, seemingly no one they spent more money on fireworks than they did on their women's team. And yeah, okay, go straight up to the European Super League.
Yeah, that's absurd.
The fact is that we should probably say that this is money against money fighting right now. Yeah, this is the Premier League have been victims of this, but they've created this monster by waving through people like the Glazers, people like, you know, or, you know, waving through state owned clubs as well, and pretending that there was a fit and proper test that would ensure that. Essentially, stuff like this wouldn't happen primarily. I know there was a lot of human rights things they decided to, you know, turn the other way about, but fundamentally, they wanted to look after their own and certainly look after their own product. And they've managed to create a monster that they're now, will have to see to. I honestly can't see anywhere where they don't see to them because they can't afford to lose these six Premier League clubs.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and the Premier League has effectively become too big, isn't it? And, you know, clubs throughout Europe.
In terms of competing against... So Andrea Agnelli has, of course, been so instrumental in the process of this. And Juventus, you know, we joke about what's a big club, but you look at the results from the weekend. Of course, the mighty Arsenal 1-1 with Fulham, another brilliant performance between one member of the European elite and some other small club. But, you know, you catch the drift. It's interesting also having Juvic here in terms of Manchester United, which has so long been synonymous with this idea of globalisation. And you mentioned it, you know, doing the sort of semi-ridiculous things and being dissociated from its heartland. And I don't know, I perhaps still naively felt as though our club's gym were, yeah, maybe it was just a vanity for me. I felt like there was still some connection to the local community.
To me, Stan Kroenke is, is a huge issue in terms of, you know, the corporatisation and global corporatisation of Arsenal. And he's a big factor in this, apparently. He's like heavily involved behind the scenes, which is disappointing but not surprising to me at all, because he, you know, I mean, he's moved clubs. He's moved his teams in America
but
to
in
different
the States,
cities.
That is
money.
More normal, isn't it?
Is more
you know,
normal.
The Utah Jazz, the
but
famous Jazz of Utah. I love to listen
but
to it.
Those fans of the cities they were originally in don't feel like that. You know, they hated that. And obviously, he
of
can't do that
did.
Here. But what he has found a way to do is move the league. So it doesn't surprise me. I feel really disappointed in it and really disillusioned by it, actually, to be honest. I feel slightly ashamed of Arsenal at the moment. I'm sure a lot of the other fans of the big six teams feel the same. I'm starting to wonder, like, where are FIFA on it? But then if you step back a little bit, I mean...
Did you see their statement?
Pretty neutral.
Yeah, did you see their statement? They were like, we will object to any closed league. And technically, this isn't a closed league
because
five teams can qualify.
Get into it,
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, I mean, where do we see this playing out? Because the obvious, the chance, as you say, the domestic leagues need these teams in it. So if it comes to a power struggle, they will have to back down, but probably find a way that looks less humbling. The Champions League is what's really under threat because they're trying to do it at the same time with a lot of the same teams, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens there? Because, I mean, they have said, the founders of the Super League have said, we do not seek to replace the UEFA's Champions League or the Europa League, but to compete with and exist alongside those tournaments.
Bullshit. They're not, you know, like with all of these statements, it's been lawyered, it's been put into a context where they can argue whether genuinely, that's not the opposite of disingenuously, but you know what I mean, whether they can ingenuously or not say, this is our intentions were good, we're just trying to do things for the betterment of football. I don't think we should seek to find logic within the process of this because, as you know, we've spoken about already, this is two kind of moneyed elites fighting against each other and trying to work out who will, I think, blink first. In terms of the process of what is supposed to be happening, the idea is that these 12 clubs will feature six from England, and I don't know how that, again, you know, we've already carried a bit of the burden of our own clubs, but it's interesting that in terms of them being integrated into this European elite, the pride or whatever, the product of the Premier League, how it is irretrievably broken by this.
I mean, look at what those clubs have. Six Premier League clubs, like say that, six Premier League clubs. It's astonishing, really. And the fact that over the last year, you know, they've taken money from the government to stay afloat. They have made members of staff redundant. They've convinced players to take a wage cut by promising them that people won't be made redundant and gone back on that. Yeah, it's utterly shameful. On the other side, though, Daniel Levy's played a blinder, hasn't he? Absolute blinder. European Super League. Knocked out by a team whose manager was in jail. European Super League.
Seventh in the league, mate. You're ninth. Look, this is a ludicrous competition. I'm not entering. I mean, sorry, this competition that we're having at this table, whereas as opposed to the Super League.
But I do like, I mean, if I suppose, like, if we didn't laugh at it, we'd be
pretty upset.
Yeah.
UEFA says that every club and player participating in the Super League could be banned from all UEFA and FIFA competitions, European or international level. So the question, of course, is, and we haven't seen, I should say, probably, you know, obviously this is a podcast, so it's recorded and then it's put out. So if you're listening to it, things will have changed, I'm sure, in between.
That would solve the right back conundrum, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Take about six of them off the table, we'll have six left.
It's all part of Gareth Southgate's genius plan. But yeah, none, as far as we know so far, players haven't come out. But I'm speaking for, or imagining what the conversations are. Presumably, it's not believable to England players like Harry Kane that this would actually result in any kind of impact.
Imagine, like, with all due respect to this, and I appreciate this is, like, very serious, I would feel genuinely quite riled if Harry Kane or any other England player would come out and openly object to this when so many of them were staying quiet over the chat about what football should do with regards to racism. I don't know. I see exactly what you're saying. I was thinking the other day, I reckon Wan Mata would be someone who would come out and maybe voice it. But even yesterday, seeing some of the reaction yesterday, how people were up in arms about it, like it was the death of the game itself. It isn't really. It's just a continuation of what we've seen over the last 10, 20 years of where football was going anyway. You know, Arsene Wenger predicted this 10 years ago. It'd be very interesting to see how what makes people talk and step out of line.
People have said the same thing about the Qatar World Cup as well, haven't they? When people started to protest about that, what have you done up till now? I agree with you, and it is interesting, but equally, this is a great kind of problem of I don't know, the left wing to some degree is this idea of, you know, what you do and what you don't do. You have to take a stand at some point. And of course, racism is where you should stand.
Yeah, I wouldn't say taking a stand against this is bad, but I think it is something that will be noted and I think should be noted. And it's not necessarily to say that, like, because he's doing this, he's anti that by not saying anything. Yes. But I do think, like, maybe that is a great example of why this is going to work, because it is about money and because it's the kind of money that people step out of line for.
Do you think so?
I think so.
I like to think of myself as someone who tries to look at all of the sides. I appreciate that we haven't really covered the pro European Super League side on this podcast very much yet, but I'm sure we'll come on to that in future episodes of the Football Ramble. Stay tuned.
We could have a new show, couldn't we? Shelve on the... Or no, we could run... alongside on the continent on the gravy train.
Yeah, we'll set up another studio in the studio.
Yes,
and we'll do them at the same time,
a meta studio. Yeah, but the point I'm trying to make is, you know, and I've said this to Luke a number of times before, like, not all change is bad. So, you know, there may be elements from conversations like this, things, it's good to see things shaken up, blah blah blah, probably, but equally, you know, when you're sitting there looking at this and talking about the $400 million that each of the founder members would get for participating and upwards of, and then there was $3.5 billion is the total, $400 million is what it divides into, which is four times as much as the winner of the Champions League final got.
Which then also, I mean, that's going to have a trickle-down effect on the domestic leagues, because that top six probably very quickly would become the top six every season again, because they've got such
a leg
perfect.
Up from that. What a perfect scenario. I mean, why would you want any other different situation to arise?
How funny would it be if they didn't? I mean, that would be amazing.
If it was just too much football and they're all knackered, it didn't matter how much money you threw at that.
just to have them complaining on a Saturday, but... Well, you know, we were playing in the European Super League on Thursday.
Yeah. Well, you did start that, didn't you?
the thing about money is interesting, because I reckon one of the main ways they might sweeten it is by saying to the Premier League in particular, look, obviously, like, the six of us playing in it, we'll get you a cut of something. That might be a way of smoothing over.
Maybe.
Swiss, well, they're the stronger ones with the stronger brands.
Well, exactly.
It's a marketing.
Six of them!
It's a marketing exercise. Football is a marketing exercise. Yeah. You can sell all your shirts in, you know, well, I mean, that's the great thing that we love about the Premier League, isn't it? Fuck's sake, is that you can go to Borneo or Adelaide or wherever the hell you happen to be and you'll get
in
a taxi.
Shout out for Adelaide.
And you get
Borneo and Adelaide.
That's my dream for 2021 holidays. You know, and you get in a taxi and someone will tell you he's a Manchester City fan, or like, oh, he beat your club at some point. And you're like, that is brilliant.
I mean, yeah.
But that is also why they can do
this,
because it's a marketing exercise. Football is a marketing exercise.
And it's clearly,
it's not football. It's not a gate. It's not a sport.
No, it does feel like that, doesn't it? It's a bit more exhibition than sport. And clearly, the people, you know, behind these deals, they're not even really pretending to care about the integrity of sport and competition. They are looking at how can the most money be made.
Well, it's content, isn't it? It's
audience,
just content.
I mean, and it's unique, isn't it? Like, other than cinema, really. There's
the
nothing
you
that you can compete
happen.
With.
That's the point about football.
True, but also in that, you know, something that connects everyone around the globe is quite a rare thing. It's just those major forms of entertainment. It's just effectively trying to compete with movies and music now. That is what people are seeing. They're looking at balance sheets rather than pitches, and that's what they're seeing. And it's just like, wearing, isn't it?
Yeah. At Swiss Ramble tweeted yesterday that, you know, the 12 clubs that have signed up to the European Super League in the 2019-20 season, they lost a combined 1.2 billion. Mm. And that's where only the last 3 months were COVID affected. And also that number doesn't include Liverpool's accounts, which haven't been published yet.
And I mean, Barcelona's debt is a billion.
Astonishing.
Pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
Facing crisis after crisis, Barcelona.
It's simple maths, but it's worth thinking about how much more money than a billion is.
It's
1,000 million. You got yourself £1,000 million in debt. It's like, they're probably looking at this going, well, I don't see how else we get out of this debt. So...
Yeah, yeah.
And look at Inter Milan as well.
Yeah.
Emergency funding. How long ago was that? A couple of months ago?
Yeah, very recent, yeah. I mean, like, when you put it like that, you're like, oh, I could make sense, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, but it does.
What else are you going to do?
That's what, like, you know, I mentioned it earlier on, but this COVID year without fans has shown them how they can get it back, and they're chasing their losses, and this is the best thing they've come up with.
Also, the timing as well is convenient because, you know, we can be angry. Yeah. Gary Neville can say his piece and do it very passionately and very well, but ultimately, there's no one in the stadiums to criticise this. Everyone's fatigued anyway for so many different reasons. You know, at some point between now and then, we'll all come out of the lockdown and there'll be a bit of a euphoria, which, based on that, which means this will probably be forgotten and fade into the background a bit, and it's all very deliberately cynical, I think.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same, Jim. And I feel this incredible frustration inside me right now that we've sat here and we've talked it through over 25 minutes. And we could each of us, you know, I know there's a hell of a lot of more angles that we could come at this from. There's so many more things and frustrations that we have generally with football, but that are just really bubbling to the surface with this. And I think the main one for me is just that it feels so... hilarious to say, cynical, but yeah, it feels so cynical to think of all of these people having looked and watched the Premier League and been watching these games of football as their lifeblood throughout the course of this pandemic and just being treated with just a sense of utter derision. We don't care about you, which we knew, but it just seems like the ultimate demonstration of that. So yeah, sorry guys, let's take a break.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Hold on, please, Gary.
Ooh, spooky. It's like he knows. Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. We have some breaking news, but we're going to get to that in a moment. Yes, breaking news on a podcast. You heard it here first. But before all that is the Betway Forward to Score update for you. Let's see how we got on. Entry to Betway's Forward to Score is free each week. Pick the first goal scorer in Betway's four selected matches for your chance to win the weekly £50,000 jackpot. Make sure your selections are submitted before the first game. Further T's and C's apply. The first game was Chelsea against Manchester City, European elite. Saturday's 5:30, Marcus picked Mason Mount. The result was Hakim Ziyech. Game two, drumroll please, sadly overshadowed by some very small football news. It was Wolves against Sheffield United. Jim picked William Jose, who hadn't yet scored for the club. It was Jim.
William Jose.
Logic
was sound.
Football is the winner. Jim is the winner.
Game three was Arsenal against Fulham. Alexander Mitrovic was Pete's pick from the shower. The result was Josh Major and Manchester United. Burnley. Bruno Fernandes was who Luke went with. It was Mason Greenwood. We'll be back with another round of Betway's Full to Score on the preview show this Friday. Breaking news on the Football Ramble. Let's go to our correspondent, Fish.
Why?
So much
There's
today.
There's so much to do. Why are they doing this today?
Jose Mourinho has been sacked as the Tottenham manager in the last 30 seconds or something like that, guys. So,
yeah.
I mean,
what fascinates me about this is I can't believe they haven't given him the Carabao Cup final because of his, like, I'm Jose Mourinho, I'll win a trophy wherever I go thing.
Do you not think that's amazing? Do you not think that's absolutely amazing?
I think
Daniel Levy. I'm not about to praise him today, I'm afraid, but Daniel, thanks for this. It's hilarious the fact that he, every single time he comes into a club, he can say he's won the treble with your boys.
He's
done this, and it's almost like it was spiteful.
Yeah, but Mourinho will dine out on that for ages, though, won't he? You know, how he talks about finishing second with Man United was like a massive thing, and he always refers back to that. This will become another one of
his. Do you think that's what he's going to say?
Finishing
seventh.
Cup,
no, like, finishing seventh with Tottenham is the equivalent of finishing second with Manchester United.
Well, he's going to say that he got them into the European Super League, didn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He did do he that. Is. Yeah. You can't take that away from the lad.
So I do think it's quite funny that, you know, even Mourinho's impenetrable record of winning things. Even that couldn't help.
Do you mind?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm quite enjoying it.
Football as we know it is falling apart. Yeah. The unrelegatable from the Premier League, Sam Allardyce is about to be relegated from the Premier League.
Mourinho couldn't win.
Serial winner, Jose Mourinho, is not being allowed to win.
Yeah. He took Tottenham for 14th in the Premier League, let's not forget, to finish sixth last season.
Yeah.
That's a big achievement, securing Europa League qualification.
Bless, you mentioned the Europa League.
Yeah, I don't obviously give a shit. But
how do you feel about it, Kate? You sort of like, I know you're just reacting to it now, but are you relieved to see the back of Mourinho because of how toxic he makes things? Or are you frustrated? That
I never wanted him in the first place,
right.
Jim. I've been trying to be diplomatic for the last, like, however long it's been. Jose Mourinho is toxic. He was a good manager. He's done some extraordinary things in Europe with Chelsea. Obviously, you can never take that away from him. Neither would I try.
But we don't know now. Maybe that will start happening.
What, as part of the new system?
You can't have your old medals.
Yeah, but I just, you know, for me, the watershed was the situation with Eva Carneiro at Chelsea. I think that exposed the kind of person, manager, I guess, if you like, Jose Mourinho is. When he came into Tottenham, what are you supposed to do? You support your club.
Yeah, of
course. You can't, there's no, I'm not, I mean, well, obviously questions asked today, but you can't just say, all right, I don't like the manager, thus the project is done for me.
Yeah, of course.
Who does that? So you have to go. And also, I tend to be a semi-optimistic person.
Semi-optimistic.
Again, I appreciate the first half of this show may have suggested otherwise, but I have, you know, with Tottenham, I always try and hope that there's going to be better around the corner. I always try, for all Daniel Levy's faults, he has achieved a lot with the club. I love the stadium. I'm not about to give you, especially not today, a kind of lyrical analysis of all the things I love about Spurs, but I love that club. And I don't think, you know, the players and everything that they've done for Tottenham in terms of getting us to that Champions League final, giving us memories. Okay, yes, no silverware before you make some hilarious jibe, but like they have created something that I will never forget, particularly over the last few years. And so Jose Mourinho can't take that away. But when you look at him and you see how he's behaved over many, many years and the kind of indicative pieces of behavior that he's exhibited. That's not someone I want in my dining room.
That's, we've got quite a big insight there into Kate Mason, the best friend, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, someone will get a new partner and Kate will just hope that they're the right person, and then they break up. And like, I knew he was rotten from the start.
I knew he was rotten. He was never good for you.
Yeah. No, you, I wouldn't.
He was never welcome in my dining room for some reason.
He didn't get the good
order. I knew he was bad news.
No, because you never can do that with breakups unless they're like really firm. You can't say that about anybody after they've broken up. You have to just.
Oh, you're not
your
doing
counsel.
It right. Oh, mate, yeah. Unload.
No, you can't, because what happens if they get back together again? I just don't think these fuckers are getting back together again.
No, I don't think so.
I'd be so Spurs if you did get back together again.
Oh, my God. Are we getting back together again?
Wonder who comes next. I mean, is it Ryan Mason and Chris Powell are taking charge for the rest of the season?
Oh, brilliant. I hadn't seen that. Chris, I mean, we're literally sitting here in a room, obviously. Yes. Chris Powell, great. Yeah. That's really exciting. Ryan Mason is what, till the end of the season? Okay, so he's going to lead us to Carabao Cup glory on Saturday.
Potentially.
Sunday.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Ooh, well,
that would be,
your first
that would
game.
Be one game, one cup, wouldn't it? That sounds like I'm referencing something I don't want to. But that would be his record.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that is some kind of European Super League type trope. Two teams, one cup.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what they're going for, kind of. Content, really outlandish content. So yeah, maybe this is the first step towards that.
But who knows?
Maybe. Get the Masons
in. We can fall.
If anyone's got good genealogy links, I want to find out if I'm anywhere related to Ryan Mason. So yeah, write in. show@footballramble.com. But more seriously, write in and tell us how you're feeling about the Super League. I feel annoyed having to call it the Super League. It's annoying. It's like this, you know, the aforementioned ex of your friend who's a twat having to call him like the most eligible man in the world or whatever.
Is that the kind of company you keep? Does everyone you know have a title?
Yeah.
No, I just mean that this league that's been created has been called Super. Also, so we have to keep saying it's Super.
Well, on that, like, I know we kind of joked about Spurs' place in this, but I wonder, and like, you know, I flippantly said that Levy has played a blinder here, but I do wonder if you look through the moves Spurs have made over the last 3 years, and you can maybe pin them on the stadium move as a whole, but Jose Mourinho is part of the reason that they have this status that has given them essentially this route into that European Super League, to a point where he, you know, beyond the stadium, beyond getting in the bed with the NFL for hosting them some games there, and they were going to do a lot more, and there was talk about maybe being the hub of the London franchise as well, to having an Amazon documentary, and then to having a guy who is just, as much as it pains me to say, he's box office. Mm. We pay attention, we watch his press conferences. I've been in press conferences, they're dull as shit, but we watch his.
Yeah.
Mm. And I wonder if this, you know, Mourinho has played his part almost unwittingly here by lifting Spurs up to a point where they have become so relevant that they're not only, you know, in keeping this kind of company and are privy to these kind of conversations, but also, like, he's been made a bit of a mug off here.
Yeah.
The statement says, have been relieved of their duties, including his coaching staff. And the rumour that is already going around Twitter is that Jose Mourinho took a stand against the European Super League.
I think that tweet is from a fake account.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised.
All accounts are fake on Twitter these days, Vish.
Good shout. But I think he, I wouldn't be surprised if he positions himself in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he'll have to climb back on it later, won't he, if he wants to manage a club in that league, although maybe those days are over for him. But I'd be surprised if he closed himself off to that. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, the only club I thought about that he would potentially go to next would be PSG.
Yeah.
Really?
But I don't think he wants Pochettino seconds again.
Yeah, exactly. He won't.
If you're PSG, I suppose they really are into that sort of grandeur thing. I remember when Mourinho came to be in sports when I was working out there, and he came through to do a bit of punditry. Because you can just pay, you know, obviously if you just pay someone enough money, they'll come out and be a pundit for you for a bit. And
why do you think we're here?
Okay, we need to talk about our fees. he came through and it was all like, every single dignitary who was in the local, in the vicinity, was sort of lining up to be a part of this flock of people that was coming into the studio with Jose Mourinho, and he was shaking everybody's hands. And it was very much like a reflected glory experience, it felt like, for the people around.
He's a brand, isn't he? He is a one-man brand, and that's just so typical of modern football. And you're interested in where he goes next. I'm already interested in it. He's just, people like that, you know, Luke once described him as one of the most charismatic people to be involved in the history of football, and he's absolutely right.
I agree.
There are very few people that have that sort of magnetism. So, yeah, I mean, the reflected status that he would have brought Spurs would have actually been very welcome in terms of sort of, you know, leveraging their position into this.
I'm exhausted. Do we just stop there, or do we say some stuff about everything that actually happened at the weekend?
Oh, yeah, people played football, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
I don't know. Does that count, or is that not what we do anymore?
I don't know. This season's probably going to get scrubbed from the record soon, isn't it? So I guess we might as well enjoy it while we can.
Yeah, look, fair enough. Let's... Oh, my goodness, I actually did just get a head rush. Let's look into the leagues. We want to talk about a thing called promotion and relegation, which is something that used to happen in football until 2021. And it just happened this very weekend for both Sheffield United, who went down, and Norwich, who came up. Props to Norwich. They're good now.
Yay.
Daniel Farke's back.
I mean, that's huge news. They solved all of them, I think.
Yeah, they solved every topic. They were very good on the topics and they came top. So,
they have done, in all seriousness, is they've been defending. So previously, a lot of their wins were, you know, 4-3s and this kind of wild stuff like you'd see with Leeds United.
Yeah.
But it seems as though that's something that they've worked on. 18 clean sheets for Tim Krul this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different kettle of fish in the Premier League, isn't it, as we know? But it'd be interesting to see what they've learned, basically, from the last jaunt.
Be easier now, though. Top six going to
straight
going
in.
Away.
I see. So yeah. They finished mid-table.
Be laughing, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of an extension. Well, it feels weird talking about it now, but, you know, a lot of the reason that Farke didn't get sacked when Norwich were in the Premier League last season when they were struggling was because they took a view that they were ahead of schedule, that he was the right man, that a lot of their players were going to stick around because they enjoyed the football they were playing and they believed in, you know, in his idea and in his philosophies and stuff like that. And they did some smart things when they got promoted. They signed Emi Buendia to a 4-year contract before the start of their Premier League season, and he's been a revelation. I'm amazed they've managed to keep him.
It's amazing.
But presumably it's because of that contract and the fact that the required money to get him out of it was too great. And good on them, because they're going to have him next season as well. They weren't thinking short term.
No.
When a lot of teams who are in a much better situation have been thinking short term.
You almost forget it's an option for teams to genuinely think long term.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, yeah. That's why it was such a, you know, I remember I spoke to a mate, I think I've said this on the ramble before, I spoke to a mate of mine who was working at Norwich at the time, and I was like, oh, do you think he's in any trouble? And he's like, well, he's just bought a new house.
Yeah.
So from the top down, there was an understanding. There's like, I know it's not going great, but we do want you to stay. And at no point was he second guessing the owners, or were they second guessing him or doubting him for an instance. So, yeah, it's worked out really well for them, and I'm pleased for them, because obviously, you know, they've walked the league to have, you know, achieved promotion halfway through April is remarkable, really.
Yeah, three other teams have done it as early as that from the Championship, and yeah, planning for the long term is something that I think Norwich fans are actually quite proud of in many ways. Yeah. Even though there's this absurd situation and the idea of being a yo-yo club, I think the idea of living within their means is something that's become quite important to the fans. And congratulations to those guys, welcome back. They take the place of Sheffield United, who, blimey.
Yeah.
That 1-0 win against... 1-0 win? That 1-0 defeat to Wolves was really quite archetypal of their season, felt like.
Willian Jose with a goal, wasn't it?
Yeah. you can have that. Let's bring you a bit of joy.
Yeah, it's a shame. And, you look at Norwich as a perfect example to compare them to, and you think, actually, would Sheffield United have been wise to hold on to Chris Wilder? Like, would there potentially have been the energy to sort of to do it all again and try and get them back up after?
Seems like the bust up was too great.
You think,
from behind the scenes?
I also, I suppose as well, like, you know, having such a brilliant season last season to such a disastrous one this year is such an extreme that maybe the damage from that is irreparable. But I mean, it's been such a shame for them, and it seems so cruel as well that in this of all seasons without fans, that the success they had, they didn't get to see the end of it. They didn't get to share the end of that labour. And now it's all just disappeared and just is but a memory now.
Yeah.
you know, for them more than anyone, the difference, you know, before and after lockdown is stark, just huge. Yeah.
Even for their form at the end of last season, you know, they were flying off the back of, you know, those fans at Bramall Lane as well, and playing a really engaging style of football. I know it feels like it was an age ago, I suppose, because of, you know, what's taken place, but they were a really exciting team to watch.
Yeah. Although, weirdly, it feels like yesterday that Norwich were relegated. I don't know.
Yeah.
What is time doing?
Time's gone weird. Yeah.
Someone signed David McGoldrick. I wouldn't, if David McGoldrick could play in the European
you
Super League,
care
and I would
so much,
him.
You should just put your hand in your pocket.
All right, Rio.
I was actually channeling Richard Keith. Yeah, and that goal, the goal that relegated them, was such a kind of metaphor.
Who scored that?
I don't know, Jim.
It was Willy and Jose, wasn't it?
Right, okay, yeah. Sorry.
It was such a metaphor for their kind of for their season, because it came off an Ender Stevens attempt on goal that was blocked and then sent back the other end. So they were trying, they were still trying to get something out of the game.
I have to say, part of my thinking with that pick was, how can Willy and most not score? I feel like this is that way.
Yeah, beautiful. Bad luck, Sheffield United. Good win for Wolves, if anyone's counting. Might as well get all of the plot points in.
They've got European Super League written all over them, haven't they?
Yeah,
no,
actually,
they
you know
haven't.
What?
They've
just acquired their players in a normal way, from normal means.
Normal being buying the entire Portugal national team.
Yeah, just getting into bed.
And even dressing like them in some cases.
I love that.
Getting in bed with super agents.
Yeah.
I love
it. It's the future. It's
strong brand. They're called Wolves. You know, that's cool.
Yeah.
They'll have
that
an
is
eye on
pretty
it.
Cool, actually.
Animals and stuff are important. It really feels strange sitting in here with you, like we're in a moment in time. It's quite hard to make the same generalisations and kind of the same gags even
because we don't know what
league.
Football's going to look like from next season.
Yeah,
we actually have no idea what the schedule will be. Like, this transition period of where this league goes. Like, will they do it all at once? Will we have the Premier League, the European Super League, and the Champions League all at once? Like, because that's what they're claiming. And how does that work? Where does that fit? This uncertainty is so strange. Never experienced anything like it in football, because obviously no one has.
Yeah, and the interesting thing will be, considering that the Premier League, a lot of the Premier League clubs make a lot of their money through the broadcast deal, I wonder what the knock-on effect for this is. Even for even just the cursory mention of the women's game there, considering they've just had like this landmark TV deal, presumably that's, you know, the BBC and Sky are looking at that and thinking, actually, this isn't what we sign up for. If we're not going to get the full gamut of them, then we're not really going to, you know, they signed a 3-year deal for a reason, because they thought they were on a good thing and that they could, you know, develop it, you know, and push it, you know, sell it for more money further on. But this totally scuppers any of that thinking now. And you almost think, well, shit, you should have gone for a 6-year deal. Obviously, they didn't see this coming, but...
Does it smack to you of not being thought through this Super League situation, or is it just that marketing... Because there's a website, you can check it out, it's like thesuperleague.com or something like that.
I know, but that's so much of that is clip art, basically, isn't it? It looks a mess.
Yeah, yeah, true. But does it seem like they were triggered into coming out early to you and they haven't really thought it through, or is it just that like marketing is kind of...
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought about that yesterday, because the you know, even things like Miguel Delaney, my
your boy,
colleague, my boy Meeks.
Our boy as well, actually.
Yeah, he's the OTC boy. But he was pointing out that, like, even the font and the logo are totally tin pot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose they don't need to worry about that, because it's not really about the optics of any of it. It's about the product, and that is going to speak for itself. Really.
Has anyone considered the optics of this? More specifically, coming out on FA Cup weekend, which we're not really going to get to, guys. The outcome is that Chelsea and Leicester will play each other in the final. I was actually going to go in for, if Luke had been here today, I was going to go in for Southampton, because I feel bad that he's going to pick on those little guys.
They were quite disappointing, though, weren't they?
It's like they didn't really try that hard. It's almost like they're minimal kind of requirement.
It's almost like they knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Is that where you think the knowledge was?
I reckon so. I'm being stupid here, but like I was genuinely quite disappointed with how they performed. I feel like they must be waking up today. I mean, there's so much shit going on anyway.
Yeah.
But be really rueful of not giving a better display, because for the last couple of months, I've really, really fallen away.
Yeah.
The lack of urgency was really surprising, wasn't it? But I'm delighted for Leicester to get into a cup final, though. And like, obviously, it'd be great to see them win it, to sort of crown this this period, this kind of post-Champions period, where they've also been really successful, to have a tangible piece of silverware at the end of that would be fitting, I think. But obviously Thomas Tuchel stands in the way, and he's a mad, scary nerd. So
I don't find him scary. Do you really find him scary?
A little bit, yeah. Just the intensity of him.
I guess I like nerds, don't I?
I guess, so, I don't know. But
yeah. You know. And for City, the quadruple is over. I don't know. Yeah. Why would that come out in that voice? Yeah. But anyway, it is over.
And in a way, it's still on because of the European Super League.
Yeah, again.
So it's fine.
Qualified them for that. Another big performance for Pep Guardiola's side. But ultimately, Chelsea beat them 1-0. Good effort, Chelsea. Congrats to everybody for making the FA Cup finals. Sorry we didn't really get to it. If you are in the mood for a bit more Football Ramble action, then we've got a brand new episode of Ramble Meets over on Football Ramble Presents. Mark Pugach sat down with Jermaine Genus to reflect on how his England career ended abruptly under Fabio Capello and to ask him about the current state of some of his former clubs, including Jose Mourinho. That'll be interesting in the context. Listen and subscribe if you would over on Football Ramble Presents. Right, we're going to go home now. How's everyone feeling?
I don't want to go home.
I feel flustered.
Yeah. I want to just go for a walk on my own, head down.
Yeah.
Maybe in the middle of the road.
Okay, don't do that, Vish. Yeah. It's all right. We're going to be back. Well, tomorrow it's going to be Marcus, Pete and Andy. So they're going to probably do the more considered, thoughtful reaction to all of everything that's been going on. But
and Pete will be there too.
Oh yeah, he's gonna come in. But yeah, everybody, I hope you're all doing all right at home. Don't feel too bad about it, even though we've sat here and told you that we feel utterly miserable. Ultimately, there's always gonna be football in some shape or form. And, you know, if it really gets too far from what you love, then you can always watch your local team.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Leighton Orion tweeted today that, by the way, you know,
we're in the market for fans.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll see you there. Say goodbye, Jim.
Bye.
Bye, Vish.
Bye.
Catch you next time.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.